Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's only two things I own that are leather.
Okay.
I have my baseball gloves from when I was a kid before I gave up meat. No need to throw them out.
Sure.
Can't save that cow. And then I was really worried about this one hike I had to do. It was like a pretty scary one that a lot of people like die on. And in a pinch, I knew I needed good hiking boots and I couldn't find vegetarian ones. So I had to buy what I think they might be synthetic, but they also might have some leather strapped in, and I don't like it.
Let me ask you this. Someone gives you a gift, a notebook.
Yeah.
Leather.
Yeah.
It's already been paid for.
Killed.
Whatever. Do you re-gift it to someone else? Do you hold on to it? Do you throw it? What's your kind of, do you politely say, hey, actually...
I say nothing.
Okay.
Because that's really tacky.
Sure.
I don't throw it in the garbage.
Okay. Because
that's a waste. Yeah, I would re-gift or just give to somebody who I think would want it. I would try to keep it alive in the spirit of the animal that was given for this notebook. But I certainly wouldn't say anything. That's super cheesy.
Yeah, I guess that
would be. Excuse me, do you know nothing of my ethics?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say anything. But also, I mean, I realize that there's no pragmatic reason not to touch the notebook. You know what I mean? Like, the thing's dead and skinned and already been bound into a book.
Right.
So obviously, I can't help this thing out anymore.
Right.
But when it comes to, like, leather couches and stuff that, like, you touch and it's around, it actually just grosses me out because I just think of... skin.
Is this leather, do you think?
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to tell sometimes.
Fancy studio like this, leather couch.
I feel like synthetics have come a long way.
They sure have, but I feel like leather, and this is as a buyer of fake leather for many years,
sure.
It doesn't wear the same. It kind of looks the same at first, but the way it creases and the way it ages is quite different. So that's where a couch, I don't think you're going to get very far. I think the fake ones are probably the ones that get those little crackies eventually in there. And that's why the ladies, or the men, like to wrap their couches in plastic. Did you ever go to those houses
when
you were a
kid? Yes, absolutely.
Plastic couch houses?
Yeah.
So uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's sort of like, why have the couch?
I feel the same way with couches, shoes, and cars. Like, three things people obsess over keeping nice. And to me, it's like a Sisyphean task. Like... there are three things that are just going to be destroyed eventually.
Yeah.
Especially living where I live, like your bumper, if you're trying to save your bumper or something.
Sure.
That's ridiculous.
So I almost like want them just to take a little ding like as quick as possible. So I just don't care anymore.
Guitars is one like that too.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
I used to always be so grateful for the first ding of on a new guitar.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, it was just nerve wracking.
Yeah.
But I never really, I also used to buy, even when I had money, I would buy used guitars. I just felt like there was more soul in them.
Oh, yeah. You do? Like the spirit of the person who played it before you?
It is. There's definitely some shit there, dude.
Do you think that's true? Does like juju pass over into an instrument? Like if someone who just ripped on an instrument, like there's good juju in it?
Yeah, man. Something that generates emotion and like,
yeah, yeah.
And plus it's an organic wood. It's made of organic material. I mean, I don't know. When I was
really young,
taking my first guitar lessons, like 14 years old.
Take us a walk down memory lane. What was this, rural Indiana?
This was in Massachusetts. My guitar teacher had a shop, right? And he had this guitar in there. It was a black Les Paul. And it was so, you know, it was like the neck was worn through, you know, to the wood in the areas where like the major chords were like A and G and whatever. And it had been a studio guitar, and he had like a list of like all the guys that had played it when it had been in the studio. And it was like, you know, like every 70s guitar player.
Cool.
Like that is cool.
Like huge rock stars. And I remember picking up, and of course I was obviously very impressionable, but I felt like I could feel it, man. I tried to get my dad to buy it, and there was no way.
No.
Last night, I was a little frustrated after everyone went to sleep. I just don't think I got any physical activity out or anything, and I felt that beast inside me. And I was very tired, but at about 9:30, 10, I walked over to my drum space, you know, maybe dabbled a little of the good, and then I played Led Zeppelin Physical Graffiti, or the bulk of it, and it just felt so nice.
Yeah.
Just so cathartic.
What do you do? You put
I was in like the middle of In My Time of Dying, and I'm just like,
so what, you have it on headphones?
Like,
you have it on headphones, or you play it over a PA, or what's
headphones?
It? Headphones.
For me, yeah. I brought that up because sometimes John Bonham died not long before I was born, within the year. And sometimes when I'm playing a Led Zeppelin record, I like to like think in my head, I'm like, there's that little piece of John. What's up, bro? And then there's this Led Zeppelin matted poster up in my house, and Bonham's rocking like long hair and a mustache in it. And my son goes, "Dada," when we walk by it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, sure. Keep saying it. I don't even correct him. I'm like, fuck it.
Do you think Joe from the Menzingers ever has that fantasy?
Nah, he probably has a different one. He probably's got someone different.
We should have asked him.
Yeah, we should have asked him. But I don't think it's Bonham.
No, probably not.
What does he look like? He looks more like Liberty DeVito. Maybe that's just because he's Italian. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know what Liberty DeVito looks
like. I think he's
like.
Got a Jerry curl, so I don't know if this is right at all.
I don't know.
I'm surprised I remembered his name real fast.
Me too.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Danny DeVito.
Of course. Of course. But yeah, this is a Menzinger's interview. You set this one up.
I did. Yeah, we played with him the night before. My band Wax Bottles was booked, but we had to cancel, so I snaked my way onto the show with my other band, Mercy Union, and we played a very fun show. And then met in Brooklyn.
And Tom and Joe came
by. Tom and Joe came, and we had this fine discussion.
Yes, we had this at
Bar A.
A Bar.
Over on Manhattan Avenue.
Manhattan Ave, that's right. And here's the interview with Joe and Tom from the Menzingers.
It's going on,
wait, tell me more about the dollar store.
Oh, the dollar store. Yeah.
Did you have to wear anything? Like a polo?
No. Yeah, you wear a polo, but not like a uniform.
Was it the chain, the dollar store?
It was Dollar Tree. So I knew this kid whose like neighbor was like the manager of like these Dollar Tree stores.
And oh, a regional manager.
Like a big shot.
Okay.
And he was like, "I can get you a job." I was like 16. My mom was just on my ass. She's like, "You need a job."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I know a guy. I'll work at the dollar store." So it was sick.
What was the experience like? What did you like about it?
Oh, God. I don't even remember, honestly. It was just easy. It was just so easy. You had to deal with a lot of freaks, though.
Yeah.
Because people, even like, they're getting things for a dollar, and they're still just up your ass, just being insane.
Well, the people who are actively shopping at the dollar store need those cents more. Like, I used to...
Yeah, that's, I mean...
When I delivered pizzas to, like, the really poor areas of town... They'd ask me for like silver back, you know, on dollars, which for a pizza man is offensive. You know what I mean? You're not even willing to give me your silver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? And
Yeah, it led to a couple altercations.
Yeah.
Not physical altercations, sure, sure. But someone being like, hey, what, you got my change? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, I just, no. Yeah, I'm like, fucking ice cream man, and carry that shit in my belt.
I was definitely, in hindsight, too, like, shy of a kid at that point in my life to be working in any sort of, like, customer service or anything, retail. Because you have to, like, talk to people. Yeah. I wasn't good at that then. My hair was, like, in my eyes.
Hemp what necklace.
Yeah, hemp necklace all the way.
There's I worked in the grocery store across the parking lot.
Yeah, yeah, in the same shopping center across. So we would
what
just,
was
like,
that called?
Garrity's.
Garrity's.
Garrity's Supermarket.
Were you guys playing music together at that point?
Yeah.
We were like, it's like 16, 17. We were already jamming the band before this, but still same.
This was Bob and the Saggots?
Yep. Yeah, Scott Band.
Those days.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple years shy of Menzinger.
See, this is like just all, everything about the Menzingers to me is exactly indicative of this story.
Yeah.
It's like I've never met a group of people who've just known each other so long and like grown up together and started this so long ago and then like stayed in the same exact band with the same guys, actually like let it grow. And on top of that, as someone who's like toured with you guys and like been around it, if you like, you don't even know who the leader of the Menzingers is. I'm serious. And that's like really rare. You know what I mean? Like I, like once you get into like the minutia and you see like who's actually like answering fucking emails and shit, like maybe you'll find out. But like on the outside, nobody knows.
Yeah.
Like it is one of those true like democratic kind of bands. And I think the only people ever to pull that off have been Canadians and Sick of It All. That's it. Like it's pretty much the things I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like I always wondered with you guys about like just the decision making process. Like how does something trickle in from like management through you guys to like making a decision?
We've got, I'm glad you picked up on the democratic thing because we are, you know, the epitome of a democratically functioning kind of unit. Sometimes to a fault when you can't get to a decision made, so everybody's just kind of like, all right, and then you just don't talk about it again until it's like
2 months later. It's like, wait, I need an answer.
It's like, wait, we did have to decide something. But it's amazing because we could all just be friends and, you know, there's no like ever, no one's mood makes the decisions. You know what I mean? Like, no one can be in a different place and then completely affect the way that we operate. But it's great because we'll have a couple group texts. One of them's with our manager, and that one is the one that, like, the real, he'll email everybody first, and then nobody will get back to him for like 2 days, and then he just jumps in the text.
Right.
And kind of just like hash it out if everybody's around.
Do you guys go on a text outside of the manager?
Oh, yeah.
We have every version of group between group texts and
crew. Yeah, we've got one that's all
band
of us.
And crew. Yeah.
Us and crew, us and just our tour manager, us and our manager.
How often do you send it to the wrong group? Do you ever do that? I've done that before.
I've definitely done it before, but I don't think in the band one.
Quite. Yeah, not so much in the band one. I don't think it's ever happened.
Literally. And there's never a break in democracy where there's a one-on-one conversation that's involved in the group text?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, you try
to not take it personally, so it gets like cooled down real quickly, but maybe that'll break off into a single text, and then you hash it out and come back.
Sure. Yeah. And he tells two friends.
I know when I get a text from our tour manager, Scott, like, just write to me, not in a group, that I'm, like, supposed to be doing something I didn't do. Like, because otherwise we don't text each other personally. But it's like Scotty Bell comes in, I'm like, oh, shit, what did I forget to do?
Like, well, what are, like, I mean, so in reality, I mean, you guys have found a lot of success. And you're obviously, like, making good decisions. So what's, like, something that you could actually, like, take from it that's, like, something you guys found that like works, that could like work for another band or something? Cause, I mean, it's like hard, you know? I mean, I've gotten to that point where I'm like, I feel like bands operate more functionally when someone's like a sledgehammer, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And like, and that's kind of when like things move a little bit more and have a little more focus. But like, that's because of my, like, through many years, like just a lot of like democratic things, like, yeah, like not being functional enough to like survive. So like, what's like an actual like tangible tip
you can tell, like, I think what I found that works for me the best, and what I think I notice works for us collectively, is when you're able to remove yourself from like the idea or I don't know opinion that you have about something. Let's say it's a t-shirt design or a riff in a song or whatever, a city that you want to play. If there's a discussion happening and it's like decided that you won't be doing what you want, it's not a personal attack on you. It's just how it moves. It's a decision to be made. You know, it's like you can't let it be a reflection of like a lack of your self-worth or something like that. You know, like I think if you can separate yourself from it like that, then you can not have any type of long-lasting grudge or anything like that.
Also, yeah. I think it just boils down to, I mean, I can think about this for days is why we have this unit we do, but I think it just comes down to like egos and not having anybody. Yeah. Like there's no, it's, I don't know. I think it's sometimes as simple as that. Somebody in a band, in some bands have egos and that just makes everything hard.
Yeah.
But I don't think I don't know. We've always just kept each other in check. I mean, don't get me wrong. We've all gone through our phases, but it's never anything drastic enough to where like, you know, we've always kept each other in check to be able to just be like,
I think we're good at picking and choosing our battles too. You get down and be like, who gives a shit if the shirt's Kelly green or forest green?
Yeah.
It doesn't really.
You get heated for a second. You're like,
yeah, at that point, you're just like, oh, I don't even care about this.
What are we
I'm
actually talking
over
about
or something.
Right now.
Yeah. I mean, how strategic are you guys though? Like, as far as like, I don't know how this stuff works, but could you like text your manager and be like, we want to go into Earth Green Day, like make it happen?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we text him and our booking agent Phil all the time that we want to go on tour at 311. Usually at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
To the point where over the years, it's been an ongoing thing for years now. We've been with Phil for like, I don't know, seven years, whatever it's been, maybe longer. But it's been like a yearly thing where, you know, we're like, yeah, dude, get us on tour 311. And it got to a point a couple years ago where he actually was in the position to submit us. And he's like, I just want to be clear. All these years, was this a joke? Because like, I can actually do
actually
it.
Make this
like, I can at least
that
submit.
That might not be the worst tour for you guys.
That might be kind of, no one would expect it.
What's 311, like, what do they draw these days? Where are they playing?
They played at the Tower Theater in Philly last time.
We saw them a couple years ago.
What's
the
cap there?
3,000 or something.
Around there somewhere.
They're doing good. I just saw on Instagram, because I follow them on there.
What's their biggest song? The Cure cover still?
It might be.
Amber.
Amber.
I don't know how big the songs were that they had in the 90s, but to me, they were massive.
Yeah, it's hard to judge like now what that would be.
Joe, you got a 311 update?
Yeah,
Instagram?
What's going on
with that? Oh, I just saw that they did House of Blues in San Diego a couple nights in a row. I don't know. I forget how big that is. We played there.
700 or something?
Yeah, so a few nights there. So
yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, you guys can maybe bring out different groups of fans to each other's, you know.
Yeah.
Well, now the way I see it is we just got off tour with Sublime. So I feel like that we made some fans,
some
reggae
311 fans,
some reggae rock fans from that.
How was Sublime?
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
I had a blast on that tour. Yeah,
I was just in a speaking of group texts, my horrible group text that I'm in with many friends that I'm not allowed to name was just talking about Sublime, and I found myself defending Sublime because like there's just better things to hate, isn't there?
Oh yeah,
you know,
right? Yeah,
like they really weren't bad. I think I said it, they were like, I'm like, listen guys, it's just like ska music for lacrosse kids, you know what I mean? Like don't be so offended by it. It's like watching Anchorman and trying to find like a deep meaning.
Yeah,
you know, just let it be as Sublime.
There are kids listening to Sublime that didn't realize they liked Bad Religion but did, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true.
Like that, you know?
Do you guys remember that band? I think I told the story. Did I tell you my really quick Sublime story?
No, but I'd
do you remember that band on your label, Epitaph, Dead Fucking Last?
I remember
the name,
yeah.
They put out an album in like the late 90s, and it was like produced by one of the Beastie Boys, and they played in Cleveland, opening for Sublime.
Where you're from?
Where I'm from, at Peabody's Down Under, and I went, and Sublime was headlining, and it was a school night, and I never heard of them and just left.
Wow. And they're playing a club with like 100 people.
Oh yeah. My god,
that's awesome.
Yeah, in like 1997 or something. Wow. Yeah.
Damn.
The first time I ever went to Asbury Park was for 311.
Really?
Yeah, it was at the Stone Pony with a band called The Urge.
Urge, yeah.
From, I believe, St. Louis.
Okay.
And I went with my buddy Matt in his rickety Ford Escort, parked in Asbury. I've never been there. I have no experience with this place. Shut the door. Guy comes right up to us holding a flapjack. You know those little leather things with the lead inside?
Yeah.
Basically just, you know, meant to knock someone real fast or break a window.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what's up, guys? You know, there's a lot of break-ins going on around here. I'm like, oh, is that right? Yeah. And I'm like 13 or 14 or something when this is happening, like 94. And, you know, I'm terrified. And the guy's like, oh, we're like, really? And he's like, yeah, but, you know, you give me like $10, I'll make sure we stay around the car and that'll be safe. And we're like, yeah, man, sure. And it worked.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I mean, well, basically, he was just like, if you don't give me $10.
Yeah, like, that would happen in Cleveland, too, at the Agora all the time. Yeah.
It's just racketeering. It's great.
It's just unlike the most minimal level.
But you got to make your way, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's something out there. I respect it when I see stuff like that.
Did you guys ever see any like crazy stuff as shows in Philly kind of growing up? Like any like dangerous experiences?
Just lots of fights that were involved people that were twice my size and moves like three times as fast as I will ever move.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's kind of crazy now to think, like, I feel like when we go to shows, there's always that fights were just a thing. Like, it was like expected. Like, that was going to happen.
Yeah.
A fight.
Don't you feel like you weren't really, I wasn't that scared when it would happen then. And I feel like if it happened now, I'd be terrified.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You were just like, ah, these guys are fighting next to me, but I'm just going to focus on the band.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, I think it was just much more expected then.
Like,
someone's going to fight, you know, it's normal. But yeah, now it's like, what the hell? Someone's going to probably, you know, stab somebody. Like, it's going to escalate. In my head, I think it's going to.
Yeah, especially, it seems like it's really declined over the years. I mean, we used to, our running joke was the first six or seven shows we played in Boston, we had to stop because a giant fight broke out. And we'd just be like, all right, that's how they go to shows in Boston, I guess.
Yeah, Boston, I think, is the most violent. How often do you guys have to stop a show for a fight these days?
These days, probably like twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
so
rare.
It really doesn't happen very often anymore.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
That is good.
What do you like to do when it happens?
Well, I try to just keep a voice down? Really low, like, and not get righteous. I hate when people on stage get really righteous about something because you can't even see what happened. You know, you don't know, like, maybe that guy had a really good reason to start punching that other guy in the head repeatedly or whatever.
I feel like it's that thing where, like, somebody stops a fight and the guy, like, the front man is always like, this is a sit, you know, that bullshit.
Yeah,
and then everybody cheers. But if that guy said, like, the opposite, if he was like, yeah, man, you know, that's not right. You got to fight for your shit here. You got to come, you know, I feel like people would just cheer anyway. Like, I don't know. Right. It's just like riling the crowd.
Yeah, and it's kind of bullshit, right? You're like, everybody, let's go. And you're starting to do this shit. You're like, don't fight.
You know?
It's like getting them all worked up.
Yeah. That's right. I just think of the kids I knew from back home. That just get drunk and get a little carried away, you know, mm-hmm. get excited, just go cool off, drink some water.
It is true. It was like, I guess back in the day, like seeing someone get punched in the face, it was almost like there's like a sport to it, you know? There was something going on there. I think often there was even a camaraderie, you know, in the end. I would be more scared now that someone's gonna like go to their car and
come back,
get something horrible, you know?
Yeah.
Jonah, you a gun owner?
No, I'm not a gun owner.
You never know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you and your secret life.
No, just like a lot of yoga, a lot of bar rescue.
Yeah,
you know,
the opposite of
great show. Did you guys grow up with any of that stuff? Like, you know, out in. I mean,
oh,
you
like
know,
my, oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like how
yoga?
That must have been a
yoga.
No, I remember the first time I learned about yoga. It was Augusta Koch. He plays in Cayetano. I was like, there's this thing, yoga. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, that's cool.
Wait,
like,
you
heard that in Scranton?
It?
Yeah. I immediately went and got my gun. I was really nervous about it, yeah.
But yeah, there must be like a lot of gun culture up there.
Yeah, specifically right outside of Scranton, there's a lot of like hunting is a big part of the culture. I had a lot of some family members that hunted and some that bow hunted. And then Boy Scouts who learned to shoot when we were really young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people had guns and gun cabinets in their house. You'd just be like hanging out and be in the
it was very normal,
living room or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Very like common thing.
Has it made you ever want to get one or have one?
It made me think about should I have one or not, or do I want one? I've definitely thought. I mean, in the end, the answer was no. I don't feel like I want one. But
why is the answer no?
For me?
For you? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that I need it. Like, you know, I don't need a gun. Like, some people are like, I need a gun under my bed. Yeah, like, if you live in fucking, you know, I don't know. I'm good. I think I'm all right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Take your chances.
I'll take my chances. Yeah. I just think it escalates things in a certain way, too. I don't know. I don't know where I stand on it, to be really honest. I just don't feel the need to have one.
Have you ever read, like, Nazi threads on Twitter?
No.
Because I always want one after that.
yeah.
You know? Where I'm like, oh, wow, I am actually in, like, immediate danger.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you ever think about it, Tom?
Yeah. I enjoy shooting a lot. I like to go with my brother-in-law. I really like shooting vintage weapons from World War II. It's pretty cool. Like some of the Soviet SKS and AK-47s like that. Never shot an automatic gun before. Imagine that'd be interesting. But it's I think it kind of, without like getting into some kind of, you know, like get myself in trouble talking about how I enjoy shooting guns. I don't know if people react on the internet. But
what the fuck is the internet?
It's this place where anonymity, it's full of growing pains, I think, right now. Okay. People kind of get carried away.
I've heard it. I think I'm going to log on. That's what you say?
Yeah, you log in. I think I'm going to log in. You dial up. Yeah. That's right.
But, I mean, I'm asking these questions because I've been considering it myself
for
a while. And now, like, the idea that, like, I would need to protect, like a family or something like that.
Yeah, that's, I think that's the only time it kind of.
But are you actually protecting them? Statistically, apparently I'm not. Mm-hmm. By even just bringing it around.
I think it gets hairy with that because, you know, if you having a gun in the household, I mean, it seems like a redundant idea, but having a gun in your household greatly reduces the chances of being involved in a gun accident or a gun crime, you know, like because there's a gun in the house.
Yeah.
I think like
get shot.
Obvious.
But if I had a family, I would certainly have a firearm in the house, I think.
Yeah.
Especially because of the fact that we haven't really experienced a giant societal meltdown on the level of other civilizations in the past.
Yeah.
And not that I'm like anticipating that or think that we're coming close to some type of apocalyptic scenario. I think it'd be silly to think that that wouldn't happen very quickly, especially after things like, was it Hurricane Andrew in the 90s when things kind of got pretty fucked up in the South and the LA riots and Koreatown and things like that. I think that people will behave horribly and tribally very quickly.
I think that's true. And I always think about that, and I'm always like, I'm in the worst spot to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, they're coming out. Yeah. Lambs. I'm in a bad spot.
You're a lamb.
Yeah.
Where you are.
Yeah.
No, I wonder that too. But then my philosophical question inside of that is the idea that I'm, you know, primed for some collapse, or my society is, or people are this bad and they're bloodthirsty. Like, it's kind of antithetical to like everything I've ever believed in and everything I'm like trying to believe in and everything like I want the way to things be. So it's like this like fight of like, you know, realism versus idealism. Like, if I actually believe in this stuff, like a proper righteous motherfucker, and I don't think you should have this stuff and I don't think anyone should have this stuff, then I shouldn't fall prey to like fear tactics. You know what I mean? I think like the conservative side does like want to poke the other. They want everyone to think we're like in danger.
Oh, totally.
That's why if you watch Fox News for 5 minutes, like 4 minutes of it's about shootings in Chicago.
Yeah.
Because they want them to be armed.
Yeah.
And I think currently they want us to think that fucking Nazis are like basically on the doorstep of every city and stuff like that.
Totally. I think that there's components there of like the fact that those kind of sensational things get people to watch TV, you know, it gets you more ratings, gets you more ad revenue. And another thing being that the gun manufacturers, you know, the people who are paying for the NRA want you to buy more guns. So there's, I mean, there's an extreme lobby to get you to purchase guns. There's like, that's why I always had a problem with, not a problem with, but I think that we don't focus on it enough in regards to the problems with the NRA, is that people are like, yeah, they really want people to have, they want to put guns everywhere. In reality, I think that they're just a mouthpiece for the manufacturers to sell guns. There are so many fucking guns, and they're so expensive, and it's such a massive industry that you're just stoking people's fear and getting them to spend. I mean, guns aren't cheap. You need a new... And, you know, a pistol is going to cost you like $600. You know, it's like not...
Yeah, and then it's doesn't... These days, don't they have all like a bunch of like cute dressings and stuff for them? Like Cabbage Patch Kids? You put like different outfits on them. Scopes.
Yeah, I mean, imagine what you can do. Yeah, yeah.
You can totally like modify them to just be like cool for you and stuff.
Yeah. I was listening to
like a phone case.
Yeah,
yeah. Like a kick drum.
Bejeweled rifle.
You think I could get like a... like a Black Panther AR-15?
Someone has one now. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Someone machine one or 3D printed a casing for it.
Say hello to Wakanda.
And did you see that Black Panther?
Yeah, it was the first movie I've seen in 3 years. In the movies.
Wow.
Three years.
Yeah. The last one I saw was right when my first kid was born, and I got out to try and see Star Wars, and it was sold out, and I had to see Krampus.
Oh, right. Oh, right.
That was about 3 years ago. And then, yeah, I just
wanted to see that.
Last week saw the Black Panther. Yeah. Yeah.
That was Krampus.
You know what? Surprisingly okay.
Okay.
And like
okay.
really dark. Like everyone died. It didn't go the way I thought it was going
to
go.
Is it
like,
about? It's about the German Santa Claus that eats you if you're bad.
Yeah, it's
or whatever.
Like some old German grandma like is living in the house, and something she did as a kid like cursed her whole family for Krampus to come back. God. And he basically came back and like murdered the whole family.
Yeah,
I think that's why I wasn't
coming.
Too mainstream.
Sounds like they had it coming.
Yeah. I mean,
my humble opinion.
Don't poke the bear.
Yeah, I mean
he's a fucked up guy. Wait. I wanted to talk about you guys playing ska parts and why you don't anymore.
Good question.
Oh, man.
Like, what was just... That was like...
Probably the same reason I don't wear corduroys.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
which is what, yeah?
Yeah, what?
That's a good question. I'm going deeper on it. I don't know. I grew out of them, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we came from a ska band, and I think that a lot of it had to do with the all the skanking, you know? Because it was like a fun thing to do in high school. Everybody go and dance...
I will on record say I never skanked. And you guys used to try
to We used to try to get you to do it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's on
wax
now.
Yeah.
Never tried at least?
I mean, I probably tried, but I didn't do it like willingly.
Why? Say. You were going to ska shows and you wouldn't skank?
No, I didn't skank. I was self-conscious about my skanking abilities. We had friends that were very good skankers.
Just really solid.
Like, yeah, I can't compete with
that. Did you guys wear flat caps?
Tom did.
Oh, yeah, I wore a Jimmy cap.
Yeah, yeah.
Suspenders?
No.
Oh, come
Never
on.
Never got into that.
No, that's now. Like more of like a skin, like the skinhead ska thing. Not skinhead, but like rude boy. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Trojan box set.
So what was like your guys' influence in that world?
We really liked Leftover Crack and Choking Victim.
We really liked like ska punk.
Yeah.
Right.
That, yeah, like Suicide Machines.
Folly.
And yeah, that kind of shit.
Right.
That was more our shit.
Yeah. And,
I mean,
and then
throw
like
some horns
second wave
there,
stuff,
yeah,
like Specials. The Slackers were always a really great band to go see. Every time they came to Wilkes-Barre, we would just...
Yeah,
go see them.
You still They're listen to stuff like that?
I listen to Slackers all the time and Specials. Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever like miss? I know, like obviously, it would sound pretty bizarre tossing into a Menzinger song these days, but like, do you ever miss like playing that stuff?
There's our friends do a Christmas show every December, the Guild holiday party, and all a bunch of bands from Philly that are friends with do cover bands. Jody just saves the day with Greg and some other people. And I always wanted to do a Specials cover set. I think
well,
so
Tom,
fun.
You're holding back. You did an amazing one.
I forgot about
where
that.
They hit Tom. It was in a band with some friends, and they started out playing Operation Ivy songs, and then on stage broke up. And then Tom came. He left the stage.
Yeah.
As Tim Armstrong, right?
Yeah.
And then you came.
No, he left as Jesse Michaels.
Jesse Michaels. He was like, fuck this. I'm not, I'm quitting this band, like mid song. And then came back as.
And then I came out as Lars Fredriksen.
Lars Fredriksen, and then played Rancid.
On my head.
So they broke up and then formed Rancid on stage.
And we played Time Bomb with some other Scott songs. So yeah, that was fun.
It was That's amazing. Awesome. That's still one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen.
In Scranton, like. When you guys were coming up, what was the venue or the venues?
We would, I used to book at a lot of different fire halls and VFWs until they would do two or three shows and they'd be like, all right,
there's
people
enough.
Throwing chairs. You can't do this anymore.
Right.
There was a place called Cafe del Sol, which was right by the university in the hill section. And that was a small cafe that did punk and hardcore shows on the weekends. And that was like the first place that I started seeing it. And then there was a skate park called Sessions. And there was an American Nightmare show, and then that night people came and broke in and stole everything, so then they had to close.
Yeah. And they had a good run, though.
Close the whole establishment?
Yeah,
they like ran out of cash.
Oh, shit. That's not cool.
But he was also, you know, there was also some more stuff going on. He came after our old bass player. Remember when he hit him with a baseball bat? Because he thought that he knew who robbed him?
It was like, apparently, I don't remember the
whole
detail.
Yeah, it was all kinds of
mess. Wait, what happened there? So someone robbed this venue.
So anyway, someone got hit with a baseball bat. Next question.
Yeah,
you kind of glossed past that.
Yeah.
So the owner of this place thought your old bass player knew something?
Knew
Why
something,
would he
yeah.
think that?
Because he did.
Good call.
Yeah.
Did the baseball bat work? Did he say anything?
No, I don't think he did.
I don't know.
He held true even after a batting?
Yeah, I think think so.
Wow. That's strong. That's strong.
I remember going to this Wilkes-Barre Fest.
Oh, yeah. Positive Numbers Fest?
Maybe it was Positive Numbers. I remember seeing like Chamberlain. This was like early 2000s.
That was, yeah, because Positive, that was like a hardcore fest.
I think this was like, this was like maybe pre, this was more emo.
Yeah, okay.
Like,
I played it once in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And almost got into a fight with the Juliana Theory.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They're fighters?
Used to play there all the time.
They sound like fighters to me.
No, they were not. They were not. It was a one-sided fight.
Definitely got to mention that most of the places that we would go see shows were in Wilkes-Barre.
They had the longer running venues. Like Scranton's venues would pop up here and there, you know, even a couple years at a time, some like sessions. But Wilkes-Barre had the longer. Cafe Metropolis and Homebase were like the two long running, like punk and hardcore venues. And so, yeah, that was like one would pop up in Scranton. We try to keep it alive for a little bit or book a show at a fire hall, whatever. But that was always a consistent place to play.
Yeah.
And that's where we would always get shows to, like, get offers to open for.
We played a great show together at Cafe Metropolis.
Yeah, holy
shit. Was cool. In the early stages.
Was this Gaslight?
With Menzingers and Gaslight. Mm-hmm. We both came up at, like, the same exact time.
Yeah.
And they had us come play in Wilkes-Barre Cafe Metropolis. And I asked them to come play at this place called The Loft in New Brunswick, which is just this like crazy apartment loft skate spot that a bunch of people lived in. We did shows.
Yeah.
We played as Ricky Bobby in the Talladega Nights.
I remember the floor at that place, like being a little bouncy. It was like
fucked
the second
up.
Floor.
The place is crazy. It was like, it was in the back of this industrial complex, and on the bottom floor was all these like garages and chop shops that literally had like junkyard dogs during the day, like scary ass, like pit bulls, like sitting down there. And then you loaded up just the most rickety, like wooden staircase upstairs into their apartment. Loading amps and shit on that was like not cool. It was a trip of a place.
Yeah,
yeah, that show was awesome.
I remember getting pizza around the corner from that place, some pizza place.
And Eric told me a story last night that he had to like shit really bad when he was there and like ran out the front door three blocks away. I'm like, where the fuck did you run in that part of New Brunswick that actually let you shit?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even.
Who knows?
I actually vaguely remember that, I think.
Yeah. It's not a good place to have to do that at all.
Definitely not.
I heard Eric's been getting a lot of ribbing for moving to New Jersey.
Why would we make fun of somebody for moving to New Jersey?
Well, yeah, Jonah can maybe talk about this. Because Jonah is under the impression that, like, that we don't eat food after 8:30 at night.
I was out and I was with Benny and Phil in Jersey City. How did this happen? And I was like, and Benny was like, we should get dinner. I was like, oh, is stuff open this late?
Are there still places to
eat? it was like 8 o'clock. I was like, we should probably get moving. Stuff. Right. And Benny was like, no, this is like a real, like,
you know, this is like a place. Like,
American city.
We like eat food at night. You know, like, we do everything like you guys. You know?
I'm from Cleveland. Like everything closes early there. I don't know.
It was just, honestly where it was coming from wasn't your Cleveland. It was your Brooklyn.
That's fair. Yeah. That's true.
It was coming from a.
That's true.
It was snooty. Okay. It was very snooty. So Eric's been. I mean, let's be real. Tom, don't be so tongue in cheek.
Well, no. To give backstory, Eric. Yeah, Eric moved to. He moved out of Philly like almost a year ago to Jersey City. Yeah. We give him a little shit for it. Just because. I mean, only. Well, for a couple of reasons. We love Jersey, but. It's funny.
It's funny that you moved to Jersey.
You're like, what the hell?
We always,
you're holding back
I'm
for my
to think
sake?
Of like,
do you guys want me to step out? Because Jonah will go on about Jersey for like 50 minutes.
Because you guys have two more shows in Jersey this week?
Just trying to think of a good enough reason for me to make fun of New Jersey and kind of like don't have one.
Well, growing up in Scranton, Jersey wasn't really like on our radar as so much. But then when we moved to Philly, everybody's like, man, fucking Jersey, right?
Yeah,
fuck that place.
I think it's
just like,
people
really
come in to
that,
party
man.
Downtown and like, you know, get in fights on South Street and act like maniacs and then go back to New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And
like, sure,
and go back to New Jersey.
People from New Jersey who are fucking up Philly guys. Yeah, I'm sure that's the case.
Sports is a big thing because people
it's
like,
not everyone from Nazareth coming into town. It's everyone from Jersey. Yeah.
I think it's the Eagles thing and the Phillies because you have a lot of South Philly or South Jersey Eagles and Phillies fans or whatever. So people are like, you don't even live in Pennsylvania, you know, but you're like 5 minutes away, probably closer than there than you are in North Philly, you know?
Well, I mean, you have no choice in New Jersey. You either have to choose a Pennsylvania team or a New York team. Mm-hmm. We don't have one.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's because people from New Jersey are really take a lot of pride in being from New Jersey too.
Yeah.
Almost.
You know, like, rightfully yeah, so you kind of want to like bust them back though.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we do the same shit.
This is where it's like this cyclical thing that happens because we're not like proud to be from New Jersey. It's all defensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you've been attacked this long, you're just like, yeah, fuck you. This is where I'm from. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like that. Liberals have, you know, the big balls now in the last year. Now they've been attacked and like, they're like, oh, we actually have to fight for something crazy.
I think the main reason we busted his ass, because we lived in Philly for like almost 10 years now, and we're from Scranton, 2 hours north. It's like, you know, all very Pennsylvania.
In like,
and so we're like, really, do you move to Jersey? Like, why?
So how old is everyone in Menzingers? Bust out some ages.
I'm 32. I'm the oldest.
31. Eric's 31, and Greg is 29.
So you guys are about 120 years old. Is Eric
think of it that
the
way.
Only one who's ever lived out of Pennsylvania?
No, Greg's dad's from Long Island.
Yeah, well, Greg was born in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he was born in Cincinnati. Yeah.
Greg's not even real.
He's not even real. We should.
But can you
that.
Say Scranton for me?
Scranton.
Scranton. You held back.
I say Scranton. I do the T.
To overcompensate for saying Scranton my whole life.
I didn't know it was such a thing outside of the area that people knew. Because so many people say that. They're like, how do you say it? Oh, you say the T.
You I'm just
like,
well, enunciate your T's. And, and
well,
out here,
because
we
grew up
even
not doing it. And then you overcompensate it because so many people were like, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Benny, where are you from?
Benny mentioned something earlier about us talking about aliens.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Which is something I love talking about.
Awesome. Now, too.
Not recently. Last year, I interviewed Tom DeLonge about aliens.
Sick.
And he's kind of like the alien master now.
I mean, he's the gap. He bridges the gap between the alternative and the alien.
Do you think he's actually. Has he actually communicated, you think?
I don't know. I think that truth is stranger than fiction, and like some of that shit that he's saying might be like, who knows? How would disclosure happen? Would it be through a guy from a pop punk band that was huge and you know the night? Yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a
stakes
salesman as
the
fucking
ears.
President. I don't. You know, like, what's who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I think anything that will like for our generation to be to have that kind of like speaker for it, like you, that's important, you know. It's like that's awesome.
Do you think we'll have contact with aliens during our lifetime?
I don't know. I think that we may already have it, but I think as far as like publicly accepted open disclosure acknowledged by all kinds of, you know, all of the institutions that we would want to be recognizing it, I don't know. Maybe I think that we will discover some type of microorganism or something as space exploration in our solar system gets more advanced, especially on like some of the water on like Phobos or in Mars itself or something like that. I think that would be really likely to happen.
I gotta be honest about something. I mean,
we're the only ones. Is that what you think?
We might be the only ones. I enjoy alien stuff, movies, Independence Day. You know, the Fire in the Sky where D.B. Sweeney got the fucking shit
those
stuck in his eye.
In the Pacific Northwest.
Like, that stuff is fun. And then, you know, I watch Ancient Aliens sometimes. In the brief research I was doing for this interview, I kind of don't believe in aliens anymore. Within, like, 15 minutes of, like, looking into, like, all this shit that kind of... Well, at least I don't think I believe in UFOs at all. Now, like, tell me this. Why, before, like, 1947, were there, like, basically no sightings of UFOs?
Well,
it seems so obvious that the connection between, like, advances in, you know, aviation and, you know, just commercial air technology led to people just all of a sudden seeing some crazy shit that... For sure, someone didn't want someone to know about, and maybe they were into the fact that people thought it was aliens because it caught them off their own scent.
Yeah,
and then like, you know, the Air Force was in 97 basically completely like debunked what happened at Roswell, and you know released so much information it kind of backs it up. Like I was like, I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult to put attribute any type of motivation or reasoning behind the motivations of an extraterrestrial race, because I think it's so far away from something that we can understand, that as humans and as the way that we do things politically and socially, from the way that we evolved here, we would put motivations onto it. Like, well, people say, what were they observing us? Or like, what's the thing? It's like, I don't know who fuck has any clue what they could possibly be doing. But as far as the advent of all the UFO sightings in the 1940s, I think it could have something to do with the advent of nuclear weapons and how close we came, or how close we still are, as opposed to completely destroying ourselves and the planet. And I don't know if they have some kind of motivation. And I say they, you know, some kind of motivation to stop that from happening, or to, you know, kind of take it a little bit more seriously. Like, I think that one of the things that someone said is like, the kids found the matches, so you have to like watch them now. Like,
right,
so we get close to just completely destroying.
Yeah, everything. And in that, and wouldn't you say, isn't there a popular theory that like they're observing us, like they could be in any form, but like they don't think we're ready to like really reveal themselves to us based on like how we're living?
Yeah, that's
like
thing
we're not evolved enough.
Totally, like our, like they may even just be us at a different stage of consciousness.
Exactly,
or we might be conscious beings that haven't moved from this physical plane. You know, that's would explain why some of their behavior is to just appear and disappear.
Well, like, I mean, we would be like ants compared to.
But in that logic, are they our creators? In that logic,
no idea.
Maybe. I think it's more like, you know, like if we don't destroy ourselves, like look what like humans would see of us like 2,000 years ago. Based if they came here, like we would seem like aliens. Like we would look the same, but like imagine like what we'll look like in like 100,000 years if we don't blow up our planet.
Right.
Like, I think it's just a different stage of, like, technology and, like, evolution.
Totally.
I feel like if someone's, like, watching from a distance and, like, didn't see a bunch of stuff they didn't like, they'd be, like, a lot quicker to just kind of set the reset button here, you know?
Yeah. Like, that's the coming back to, like, the whole ascribing motivation to them. You know, it's like, well, who fucking... I don't know. I like the theory or the idea that maybe our... the relationship that consciousness has to energy and matter is not fully understood by us yet. It might be more anchored in something that is quantifiable in the future, you know, like an actual scientific connection. And then maybe that will start to explain more of the esoteric things that people seem to come to conclusions with at all the religions at the same time around the world and things like that.
Yeah.
All that weird shit.
I almost feel like the answer is going to come from the inside, not space. You know totally. What I mean? Like, we've only gone, 2 miles under us? And that's it? Like, we have, like, 98% of Earth unexplored. We
crazy.
Haven't even...
The oceans as well? Damn.
There's some wild stuff down there.
Definitely.
Did you see James sure. Cameron riding them submarines, like, 3 miles deep into the water?
Nuts.
He's so cool.
Yeah.
Man. I just think of the cool stuff that I would do with money if I had like James Cameron money like building like the best submarine ever made to go the deepest into the water ever.
Because he wanted to find the Titanic,
just
make a movie about it.
Great way to spend your money.
So you awesome.
Yeah.
So cool.
What would you do if you had like James Cameron money?
Oh man.
And we're
not going a submarine under the fucking water. That's for sure.
No.
I hate that. That prospect's awful. I guess, I definitely don't have the facilities to do anything like Elon Musk does, but that would be my dream to be like, really just kind of get people interested in space.
Privatize.
Well, I think James Cameron might have close to like Elon Musk money.
He might.
So you could maybe like start
Terminator?
Your own competing Tesla company.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. What would you call it?
Oh, man.
Tomsla.
Yeah. Tomsla. We gotta think that. We gotta storyboard that one. Yeah. About
hey, you gotta start somewhere. I like it.
Joe, what about you? Yeah, what's your Cameron reality?
By the Sixers.
By the Sixers. Yeah.
Trust the Joe process. Yeah.
I would just buy myself onto the team.
I would play.
Nice.
Oh, I like that.
That'd be terrifying. Basketball is never my sport. I was, again, way too timid of a person to play. Like, baseball, you hit it and you run, whatever. Basketball, you got to be up in someone's shit. Like, you got to be, like, pushing people kind of, getting a little physical.
It's
like,
not for you.
No, I was not that kind of. So I'd buy onto the Phillies. That's
I never took you as timid.
Really?
Oh, he's nice.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah, but I
sometimes
mean...
sometimes you even wear, like, sunglasses inside.
I might like that.
You know?
All right, yeah. I'm down with that. That's fine.
Man, I'll never forget that one time we were with the Bouncing Souls and we did that first tour with them, and some kid, like, real cool-looking kid walked by with sunglasses on inside. And Brian Keelan looked over at him and goes, your future's not that bright, kid. I was like, holy damn. Shit, these guys don't give a fuck.
He got him.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's good.
Yeah.
He's not playing that shit.
No.
I just heard a great story about, so my wife's uncle is like an old school punk rocker hippie. He was a hippie in the late 60s, and... they restore cars for a living, and I'm at the shop, and this guy comes, and he's like, oh, you gotta meet this guy. Me and him saw the Ramones at the Stone Pony in 1975. I'm like, oh shit, this is cool. And he's like, he's explaining what this guy said to him. He's like, I got a call from this guy, and he said, listen, we gotta go see this band. Every song sounds the same, but they all kick fucking ass. And that was the description of them going to see the Ramones. Yeah. Oh, 75 awesome. At the Pony. Man, how cool.
That is pretty cool.
So fucking cool.
I wonder, like, and it just got me thinking of, like, what would be, like, the, like, venue and era and band. Like, if I could just choose, like, that great moment in time of, like, the perfect band and which one I'd want to go see. You know?
I mean, Clash.
That happened
sure.
right back to the Clash.
Yeah. But, like, sure. what era and, like, where? Like, Shea Stadium or, like, before
no,
that?
No. Before.
Like, in some, like, shitty British town in the north.
Yeah.
In, like,
I don't want to see them when they suck. Like, I want to see them when
they have all
good,
the songs you wanted to hear by then?
No. But if I had to narrow it down and pick one, I guess I would pick that one.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of people, their first thing to jump to is, like, I want to see them before. Like, yeah, like you said, but...
Yeah.
Which I do back, but I want to see. Yeah, I guess like you said too. Like I want to see the song. Like
gotta,
they didn't write those
songs.
Yeah,
right?
You gotta, like,
yeah, you're right. Maybe one of the Clash on Broadway shows. Is there, like a dozen of those or something.
Is that
could be cool.
Yeah. Or like we used to have that poster in our house. Remember, it was the Clash at like some Glasgow O2, some shit. Like it was a picture of them backstage.
Oh yeah,
but like not like the biggest place. Like 1,000 people. Yeah. You know, something like that. Like, if you're familiar with Philly, like Union Transfer size. Like,
right.
Or Webster Hall. Like, I think that would be so like awesome. A good size because they're big, but it's still somewhat intimate, you know?
Yeah.
I think it would be a good era.
Jonah, what would be yours?
I don't know. You know, I was thinking about it a little bit.
Yeah.
I think maybe Guns N' Roses.
Like oh, in
like
LA?
Appetite, like LA Strip, like
man,
that record,
cool.
like
that
original
be,
lineup.
That'd be pretty badass.
I think that would be pretty good.
Yeah. That'd be badass, if not just with for the crowd.
Yeah, the crowd would be incredible.
I want to be at the Social Distortion Roxy show that they have the live album for.
Oh, my God.
I just think of the Roxy when you said that. I want to be there.
I just picture, when you talk about the Guns N' Roses show, I just picture the beginning of Airheads. Like, it's someone who just looks like Brendan Fraser on a motorcycle just pulling up.
Well, I would have been too young. My mom took me to see them on the Illusion Tour in 91, but I was like 12.
Hell yeah.
That was one of my first shows. But yeah, I think the Appetite Tour. If I was older, I wouldn't want to go when I was 12. I want to go when I was 21. Yeah. Like, old enough to drink, but still super young.
Old enough to decide whether you want to do some cocaine or not.
Yeah.
Where it's just not off the table.
Yeah. What about you, Benny?
I don't know. I go back... It like right off the top, I could come up with like dozens, but I definitely think of like a really early Zeppelin gig.
Yeah,
like in England, you know, at one of the smaller places because they did have those. But again, it's where like that's not all my favorite songs,
right?
You know. But then I think about Nirvana was like still small when Nevermind came out for like a while.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So like. So I could have a chance to see, like, Nirvana played, like, the Court Tavern and, like, weird places like that.
Yeah, we played a place in Seattle that was really small, like, in 2008 or some shit that they used to play. The Satyricon? Is that a place?
That's in Seattle, yeah.
I think it was there. I don't want to, like, misquote this, but yeah, I think it was there, but same deal, like, small.
Something like that would be cool, because that would be super intimate, and then I could hear all the songs I want.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, but maybe seeing, like Nas in like the early 90s in the city somewhere, like, or like Biggie in the city somewhere, like way early on. It's Biggie's anniversary today, and someone,
is it really?
Lizzie Goodman just retweeted Biggie just spitting like when he was 17 on the street in Brooklyn. It's just so good.
So awesome. So
I'd love to see something like that.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, Brad doesn't have a mic, but I'm assuming replacements.
Yeah, Brad, where is yours? Oh, replacements, Minneapolis. Okay. Yeah.
I would go, no, I'd go old school. I would go either the 72 Stones tour.
Okay.
Or front table at the fucking, at like Sinatra.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, that's
cool.
I'd
go way back.
That'd be awesome.
Oh. I saw The Clash and I saw Nirvana in like a venue the size of Bowery Ballroom.
Right. You actually did that cool show. Right.
Yeah. Lived that life.
But I just like to remember the shows that I was at. Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of, oh, that's kind of fun. Like a Henry Hill Goodfellas scenario where like they actually bring out a table for you.
Yeah.
And you walk through the back kitchen.
Like Garwood, like playing at Garwood. Yeah, like Garwood. Walk through the back kitchen.
I feel fucking so bad at that place.
Yeah.
Where is this?
So it's Crossroads.
Crossroads.
Okay. This venue in Garwood that Andy Diamond's doing shows at. And it's a really cool place. And the guy who owns it's great. But like to get from the backstage area to the stage, you got to go through the kitchen. And it's not cool like Goodfellas. Like it's actual dudes like working back there. Like, hard, you know what I mean?
It's not the
like,
prep part of the kitchen. It's the it's the 2 feet, well, I guess 3 feet wide part where the fryer and grill is. The table.
Maybe it's good.
Would you prefer that versus walking through the crowd like St. Vitus?
Yeah.
For
loading
sure.
Moving people. This is where drummers can talk right now. Like loading, like stands with cymbals on them through a crowd. Fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Like you either have a choice to like say excuse me 45 times a trip or just be an asshole and start poking people's legs.
Yeah.
Which I usually just eventually I go with.
Yeah.
Some girl last night. I was trying to load off and she was sitting there just having a chat and like, excuse me, made zero effort, saw me, excuse me. And I kind of nudged through. I'm like, good effort. Thanks.
You know, that's a little shitty right now, but you're dragging things through the state, through the crowd, and they're there to see your band. Wouldn't they be like,
just, yeah.
Hey, you're cool. Like, I'm going to see your band. Like, yeah, move. It's not like this, like, stink face. Or it's like, when I'm on stage, you're not giving me that stink face. You know?
Why the fuck is it here? Nobody ever their instinct to just help?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why is it you never an instinct to just be like, yeah, we could get him on stage in 4 seconds if six of us just grab a stand?
Yeah.
Right?
Like, what's the, like, the system, like the bucket system. Like,
yeah,
you know, like the
Eli Whitney of loading drums. Like,
do you want a bunch of strangers that like handling your drums? Like,
no, probably not.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably not. Point, yeah,
I'll help, dude. Yeah, and like all of a sudden, his cymbals in the front of like cutting through an amp. Yeah. And,
he's usually holding a beer, so you'd only have one hand anyway.
True. Yeah, I didn't think this through.
Yeah,
in theory, it's.
I don't know, but it is annoying.
It is.
I mean, I was thinking that yesterday. I go to my drum space yesterday to set up for the show, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, I have to break this down right now, put it all in shit, put it in a van, drive literally like, I don't know, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Just take it all out.
Totally.
Put it on, back down, back in the van, have to convince Jared to leave. And thanks for that, Tom.
Yeah,
you weren't helping there. The Jared, who sings for my band right now, is 27. You know what I mean? He's got two German Shepherds, no kids. And it's just, you know, he'll go all night.
Yeah.
But we take the van together, you know?
Right.
With different lifestyles these days.
How long does it take you from, like, drums in cases to, like, fully set up hardware ready to go?
Where am I?
Yeah.
Like, how much space do I have?
How much time do I need to do it? Because if I need to do it, I can do it in, like, 10 minutes. Like,
sure. What's the fastest you could do it?
Oh, yeah, 5 minutes.
Yeah, if you need to. But if you're taking your time fucking around.
Nah, who cares? I'm not breaking my back.
Yeah.
I like that. I used to, like, always attack a drum set. I was like, all right, set up a drum set. Now I'm like a turtle, man. Just grab this piece.
Yeah.
Sip a drink.
Check phone.
Well, me and Joan are practicing not looking at our phones as much.
Nice.
We downloaded an app where you press a button and you grow a tree.
Yeah.
You know about this one, Joe?
I've heard.
Yeah, you've heard. And then eventually you grow a forest when you
if you check your phone, you kill this tree.
Yeah, and your tree dies if you check your phone. Jonah turned me on to it, and I gave him a friend request about like 4 or 5 days ago.
Benny, I said, Benny, add me as your friend. We can have some accountability. And then yeah, he sent me
his but email. You know how many fucking times I've emailed? You sent me your email address.
Well, because I thought I have a couple different emails and I have a specific one linked with this app. So I want to make sure we're on the same page.
And guess what's going on with my friend request?
It's in limbo.
It's in limbo.
It's never been answered.
Yeah.
And I already like don't want to plant
just
trees
a little
anymore.
Leaf hanging off of that tree. That's no. What that friend request
Benny,
is.
Benny, I'm sorry. It's been a, you know, I forgot.
Whatever, dude.
I'll be your friend down there if you want to try it.
Have
I'll
you done it? It?
No, I used Will one though in? That you grew a different plant with every glass of water that you drank.
Oh, ooh. Interesting.
And I drank 3 or 4 times as much water as I usually
really?
Do.
Really? That That's what I've been need to drink more water.
Yeah.
I'm bad about that.
I had one that was a water thing where like you shake it and the water moves and like as if your phone's a bottle of water, so the water like moves and like waves around like as you move your phone, and it would fill the more you drank.
Nice.
It was kind of cool because you could fun. See it. Yeah, you could see the water.
I feel like I feel like I always get those apps and get really into them for like a week and then never use them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what that one was. Yeah. I did, and I kept track, but I lost.
I killed a plant and then I didn't go back.
Yeah,
I had a whole garden full of plants though before. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did feel like a weird attachment to this non, you know, sentient
dude,
computer program thing.
Dude, I have the same problem, man. I do. I
what
can't
is
feel
that?
Bad.
What is that?
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, like, if you think enough,
empathy.
As far as, like, of what
is that?
Of what reality actually is. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Reality is merely, like, perception at any point. And, like, the idea that, like, I became emotionally invested in the survival of anything made me attached to it, and I didn't want to see it die. And in a way, it does actually die, right?
Yeah.
Like I had this issue. I had this Farmville game where I grew many.
I've definitely seen like an ant
many
or two
animals.
On Facebook.
Yeah,
wanted
yeah,
me
many
to be
animals, and you know, I had a lot of things going, and I was so bored of this fucking game. I didn't want to play it anymore, but I just felt this need for months. I didn't advance in the game or anything. I just basically kept it going.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In a weird, like, Truman Show kind of way where, like, I'm literally, like, the button master of this place. Like you're talking about. Like, if we're really, like, an experiment from somebody from another place.
I'm like, let's see how this thing plays
like,
out.
Oh, man, fuck this. Reset.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, here comes the big wave. And they just, you know, put another sim game on.
Yeah. I had a similar one with the cats, like you showed me, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you take care of cats in this yard. And then as you play the game, the yard expands to like the living room, and you get a little living room for your cats, and you just give them toys and keep them happy.
And you can
like,
name the cats after your friends.
I don't even like cats.
But it is real, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it interacts with you the same way that any other pet animal kind of thing would.
Yeah.
To a degree, you know.
And I mean, and
it's like goldfish is the same thing. Like, you know, what kind of communication do you have with a goldfish? You know, it gets excited when you feed it, I guess. And I don't own one, so I might just be talking shit on goldfish.
But if you believe that, like, science fiction's an indication of the future, which it usually is, like, that experience is soon going to be, like, the human experience. Like, it's going to be lived virtually, you know what I mean? Like these side lives you're gonna have and stuff like that. Like,
totally,
it's getting realer and realer.
It's already started. I have some friends who play video games online that are with like thousands of people, you know, like online
games.
Yeah,
the real life
MMOs.
Yeah, that kind of shit. MMOs. Mm-hmm. And they'll spend you know 3 hours a day doing that, and if you're working for another 8 hours and then you have to eat for an hour, like your social life is as an avatar with other people, and as the sensory part of it gets more realistic, like if you could actually tap into to your neurological network, and what would be the difference?
You know? Yeah, I think people, like so many people I talked, like remember the, I don't know, we might be like dating ourselves here, but like the avatar thing, it was like ICQ or whatever, when, like late 90s, early 2000s, you got like, you made like a little person and it was like a chat room, but it was like a visual one. You'd go to different like rooms of this house and you'd talk to people, but you designed your own little like character. I'm sure there was all kinds of things for this. I just remember this one specific one, and everybody laughs at that now and they're like, that's so dumb. You just like go and talk to people and like tell them how you're feeling. I'm like, yeah, Facebook. That's exactly what you're still doing. Like it's all the same. It's just in different forms. I mean,
maybe it's even cool in a way in the advancement of like society, because, you know, you say like, oh, you should always be judged on like the content of your character and like how good of a person you are, and that's where judgment is. But like it or not, people are judging people on how they look on first glance, like constantly.
Yeah.
So like, what if there was this like true purity of experience where like on this thing you are equal and you're being judged on like how kind you are and how well written, I suppose, yeah. like knowledgeable and all these different things, like that would take that away.
Yeah. So wild.
Maybe it'll save us.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right. Thanks to Joe and Tom for coming by. Thank you to A-Bar for allowing us to record in your bar. If you're in Greenpoint and want to get a beer on Manhattan Avenue near McCarran Park.
Or a kombucha on tap.
Or a kombucha yeah. on tap. Or
as it's
cold
been
brew.
Pointed out, it's a great place to go if you're off the sauce, as they say.
Yeah.
Because you can hang with everybody
there
else.
There is cold brew and kombucha.
I think that's fantastic.
Which is strong.
I think it's good.
Strong selections.
Yeah.
Very strong. Need a little break now.
But thanks so much for having... I mean, it's so nice that they let us do it here.
It is
you
nice.
Know? And people can give us money now, right?
Yes. If you want to give us money, you can go to patreon.com/goingofftrack. You can donate. You can get some cool incentives. You can get early episodes.
And just a reminder, Jonah is the only one around here without children, okay?
That's true.
He's got nothing to pay for but himself.
It's true.
And his ramen bowls, whatever the fuck he does.
I think you would be surprised. I'm a little... I like organic produce. I got, you know, like, I have some things that...
What's, like, your daily nut? Like, you wake up in the morning... Like, what are you spending a day just on yourself?
I don't know.
I'm talking, this is yoga class entry.
Right, right, right.
This is food, drink.
Are we talking rent, too, on top of this?
Yeah, if you want to prorate your rent. No, not rent. That would just confuse it.
Yeah.
Like, out of your wallet.
Are we talking, like, my cell phone bill?
No. Okay, I'm talking, like, insurance. Out of your wallet daily nut.
Okay.
Like, you're walking around, you got a bunch of stuff
I'm
to
a
do.
Big, like, I'm a big proponent, like, monthly passes. So I'm like,
sure.
I'm monthly for Subway, I'm monthly for yoga. Okay. Like, anything I use, you know, I'm yearly for the bathhouse. Anything I use a lot, I just kind of... but I would say, you know, I'll get an Americano, maybe.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll get, you know, I need all my smoothie supplies, organic sure. collagen powder, maca. I would say probably, like... Just on coffee and food, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 bucks. But if I'm, you know, it depends. If I'm going out to dinner, you know, that could get
sure.
crazy. If
especially
I'm
in Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you people spend for dinner there? About what, 70 a plate?
No.
For avocado toast?
No.
I don't even know what you people eat.
No, I mean, but you know, I'll tell you. You know what? You know, if I go to Juice Press, I'm getting a smoothie, $10. That's $10.
Yeah.
You know, I get it.
My local smoothie spot is 10 and change.
Yeah,
but that's why I got to go to Nature's Way, the old school spot.
Yeah, it's like a regular smoothie. It's not a deluxe.
I mean, it's got a lot of stuff in it and organic.
I'll only do organic if I'm going to pay $10 for it. Because all these places around here, like Liquiteria, Juice Generation, you go in there, you're paying $10. It's not organic produce.
Yeah.
I feel like if I'm going to pay, like Juice Press is expensive, but they put a lot of shit in there and it's all organic.
That should be organic because
you go to the
A&P
and get the ingredients for 75 cents.
Yeah. And Juice has, like so much pesticides, GMOs. Like, so.
Well, there's just so much of the.
You know what I'm concerned about? Is that,
exactly.
Is that now that we find out your daily nut on just stuff like this, I don't think we inspired people to give us money.
Well. I don't
just
know.
Remember, everyone, this is Jonah. Brad's got kids. Like... I got kids. They get these
as
kids.
As I've gotten older, you know, I feel like it's...
I make eggs in the morning. It's turned into like 8.
Yeah.
I used to make like, you know, a couple for me and the...
Eight eggs.
Yeah, you know, I used to make 2 for me.
It's because you're in training, right? 8 eggs.
No, it's not for me. But that's what I'm saying. I'm cooking breakfast for a family. I almost ripped through
it's like
dozen eggs.
2/3 of a dozen eggs.
I feel like a camp cafeteria.
I think that self-care is important, though, and I think as I've gotten... I do. I think as I've gotten older, like, I spend less money at bars, I go out less. Like, I feel like I don't feel as bad dropping $10 on a smoothie.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
If it's gonna, you know, be healthy and satiate me.
I mean, the one thing that people should know that when Jonah just said, I'll spend $10, basically he was pointing at himself... to be like to maintain this. And he kind of did that whole
this
with his hands.
Body.
He went from his shoulders to his knees, just like almost like, look at the fucking goods.
Yoga boy.
It was really, I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. We're not going to do well with money on this one. Yeah. Yeah. Shit, man.
You asked. Benny, you wanted to go down this road.
Joe and Tom spend way less money than you, probably.
Yeah, and they live in Philly, so they definitely spend less money on rent.
Yeah, they just drink, I don't know, they probably just have a beer and a Scrapple, and then they're good to go for the day, right?
You should really...
They're just like, Eagles, woo!
Yeah, you should...
That's one thing I'm mad we didn't talk about in this interview. I know that those guys were on tour when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, and they watched in Antwerp with a bunch of Europeans at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I forgot to ask about it.
Well, we'll have to have them back.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
After the party.
Maybe different. Oh, good job. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.